What's driving national growth in all industries from one of the country's most dynamic regions?
Welcome to Strategic Compass, our new podcast exploring the strategic forces shaping the future of business. I'm Patrick Ryan, KPMG's National Managing Partner, Advisory Strategy and Markets.
And I'm Kathy Hollinger, CEO of the Greater Washington Partnership. We are thrilled to sit down with the region's most influential leaders to hear their stories of bold ideas, collaboration, and leadership shaping the economy from Baltimore through Washington, D.C., all the way to Richmond and nationally.
And as we dive into these conversations, we'll uncover how Greater Washington area CEOs are driving national conversations.
And now I look forward to hearing Patrick as he expertly guides us through an essential conversation that promises to uncover some truly thought-provoking insights.
I'm so excited to be joined by Bob Blue today, the CEO, Chair, and President of Dominion Energy. Got an exciting conversation ahead. We got a lot of really fun topics. So I really want to thank you for having me in, Bob, and for taking the time for us today.
Patrick, I appreciate the opportunity to join. I look forward to the conversation.
Great. So Bob, let's start it off with just a little bit of discussion around Dominion. Long legacy, deep part of really American history. We'd love to just hear a little bit about the origin story.
Sure. It's really pretty interesting. We started as a canal company, the Appomattox Canal Company, and then ultimately moved into electric streetcars. Richmond had a thriving electric streetcar back in the day, and then to the energy company that we are today. But what's quite interesting is that we just finished a high voltage test lab. So testing high voltage pieces of equipment, very complicated, precise operations at the site on the Appomattox River where our company was created hundreds of years ago. We've come full circle, and during that time, we've invested in every way you can imagine generating electricity, transmitting and distributing it, and we continue to advance to this day. But I think it's pretty cool that we started as a canal company on the Appomattox River, and now we have this amazing high-tech test lab back in the same spot.
All in the same spot, in a beautiful building down here in downtown Richmond.
Yeah, well, here we're on the James River, and our company headquarters here in Richmond. The Appomattox facility is south of here on the Appomattox River, about 25 miles south. But yes, we're headquartered here. We've been in this building since 2019.
Wow. Well, this is a beautiful facility for those of you that are not watching on video. So a lot has happened in those couple hundred years back to the streetcar story. Would love to just talk about how you've taken this business from the origin story of the streetcar and to where we are today around a completely different business model. Obviously, tremendous multiple transformations during that time frame. Talk to me about just how throughout that time frame, Dominion has continued to be such an influential major power provider across the United States and certainly here in the Virginias.
Yeah, so we grow with our customers and the communities where we do business. And we've been very fortunate for much of our history to be headquartered in Virginia, in Northern Virginia, Richmond, the eastern part of the state, extending west to Charlottesville and a little beyond. And that area has been very vibrant over the years, and we've seen a lot of changes. Now, our company has added and subtracted geographies over the years. Today, we serve that part of Virginia I just described, part of Northeast North Carolina, and then we serve customers in South Carolina as well. We're one of the two large investor-owned utilities in South Carolina. We also operate a nuclear power station in Connecticut. But what's driven our changes throughout our history is a culture focused on serving our customers, growing with them, finding ways to serve them as their businesses grow, as their communities advance. So we've been lucky to be in the places we've been in, but we also think we've helped those communities thrive by giving them reliable, affordable, energy for a long period of time.
As a lifelong Virginian, I've certainly been a beneficiary of that. So thank you for the continuous power. I think it's something that we don't think about on a daily basis until it goes away from us.
Yeah, for people who are sports fans, we're kind of the offensive linemen of the business community.
People don't
pay attention to us unless a penalty gets called. They may not hear about us, but we're in everyone's home, and we really strive to serve them well.
So I think one of the main themes I also picked up through there is really customer-centric, that the needs of the customer have evolved back from running streetcars here in downtown Richmond to today being very different, and certainly focusing on some of the big drivers of energy, specifically data centers.
Yes.
We're in a unique spot in the greater DC, Baltimore to Richmond area, that data centers, some would say that this is the data center capital of the world. And so you're kind of at the epicenter of energy demands. And so how, we'll certainly get more into talking about how you've morphed longer term, but how do you think about data centers and those needs, and how does that really tie back to your continued focus on the customer?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Northern Virginia is the data center capital of the world. We've connected, since we started keeping track, about 450 data centers. We sell 27% of the electricity we sell in Virginia today is to data centers. Wow. And we expect to see substantial growth in that customer business over the course of the next decade or more. So as we think about that, it's very different than what most companies like us, electric companies, have experienced over the course of the last couple of decades, where demand for electricity has been roughly flat, maybe even declining a little bit during that time period. Even as the economy has grown, because of energy efficiency, demand for electricity has been pretty flat. But now we're looking at rapid demand growth. In the part of Virginia that we serve, it's called one thing about our industry is there's a bunch of acronyms and unusual names that's tough to sort out, but people call it the DOM zone. It's the area we serve from a transmission point of view within a larger regional transmission organization called PJM, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, Ohio. Within PJM, they have estimated that the DOM zone where we serve, that peak summer demand, because typically our highest demand is in the summer months or the winter months, our peak summer demand will grow on average 6.3% a year for the next decade. So 6.3% annual growth in electricity demand is extraordinary. It's like we haven't seen anything like that since the years after World War II, when the country was going to electrify. Appliances were electrifying, homes were electrifying. I actually grew up in a house that had, I learned much later in life, that had a medallion on it. It was an all-electric home. It was built in, I think, the year I was born, 1967. And it had a VEPCO all-electric home medallion because we were heating with electricity. We didn't have air conditioning, but our appliances were electric. Like, that was a thing. And demand grew very fast in that time period. And then it flattened out for the last couple of decades. And now it's growing again. And all this time, we're serving our customers using a machine, which I think is probably the greatest invention of the, perhaps in the history of the world, certainly in the modern era, electricity, the electric grid. We served it when we were growing fast and we were building a lot onto the grid. Then we served customers when demand was relatively flat. And now we're going to have to grow that infrastructure very fast over the course of the next decade or so. And so you think about that. This is a machine that's been in existence for over 100 years. We're operating it and adding on to it and upgrading it all at the same time. It's really exciting. It's not something people think about very much. They think they hit the switch and the lights come on. It turns out it's a lot harder to do that than people might imagine. And it's going to be challenging as demand grows the way I'm describing. But it's fueling an incredible economy in the United States, and particularly in the greater Washington region, an economy of innovation, of growth in talent, all the things that businesses and people want that should attract them. And we're able to do that because we have access to this technology, to these data centers. So it's really exciting. We're happy to be part of that ecosystem. And we think it's going to be great for our customers and our communities as we see this kind of growth.
I have to ask you, working with KPMG, we have a similar longstanding over 100 year history. And I'm just struck with the same business challenge that we face of how do you build this agile business and still maintain the legacy of something that's been around for so long? Like, your agility is so not only impressive, but it's going to become even more important in the coming years. How do you think about that in your business model?
Yeah, well, so we start with reliability. And that's something that I think is hard for people really to grasp. But when you come to work here, and I've been working here for about 20 years, I was a lawyer in private practice. I was working for the state of Virginia, and then I came here, and I felt it immediately. The people who work at this company, that's what they think about first every day, keeping the lights on. And when the lights go out, getting them back on.
Yeah.
And that drives everything else that we do. And in order to be good at that, we need to maintain the processes and systems that have been in place for a long time, but then take advantage of newer technologies, newer things that we can add on, all while making sure that we hold on to the old system. So you end up in facilities of ours that date back decades, that look like they're decades old, and then on the same site, something that is very modern in the ways that we think about generating electricity in our transmission business, the big wires, and then in the distribution business, where we're getting much more agile. The grid is getting a lot more clarity, a lot more sensors out there for us to understand what's going on, which allows us to operate better. So it's start with that core of reliability, make sure you're focused on that all the time, and then take advantage of new opportunities that are coming along in order to serve our customers.
Great. Well, there's certainly some lessons that I'll be taking away from that. So a few other things just looking towards the future. Dominion is one of the leading offshore wind projects in the country. How does that fit into regional growth, specifically around wind?
Well, I think I would take a step back and say, you hear this phrase when people talk about energy, all of the above. And sometimes when people say that, what they really mean is all of the above that I like. And our company is truly all of the above. So when I started working here 20 years ago, 50% of the electricity we generated, roughly 50%, was from coal. That amount has shrunk dramatically to less than 10% today. Natural gas, on the other hand, a very small amount of the electricity we generated was from natural gas, and today it's closer to 40%. We've generated electricity from nuclear for quite a while and expect to continue to do that. As we go forward, this demand that I've been talking about, we're going to need to add new forms of generation, new sources of generation. Some of it is going to be things that we've done before. Natural gas fired generation, for example. We've been adding quite a bit of solar at Dominion Energy over the last few years. We're going to keep doing that. And then some of it's going to be different. And offshore wind is an example. If you think about the wind resource for a coastal state, the best resource is offshore. That's where it's windiest. And so we spent some time looking at this. There was a lease auction in 2013, a long time ago, and our company bid on the lease with the expectation we weren't exactly sure how this might work out, but we felt like if there were going to be an opportunity to develop offshore wind in Virginia, we ought to be the ones to do it. And we built then a couple of pilot turbines that have been operating since 2020. So they've been out there for 5 years now, operating incredibly well. And we concluded some years ago that a larger project would make sense for our customers. Everything that we do at this company has to be approved by regulators. We're a heavily regulated company, so we went to our regulators and sought approval for a project big enough to serve 650,000 homes and businesses when it's operating at full power. We're well underway in that project. The construction of it is going extremely well. We would expect to be done by the end of next year, but it's an opportunity to do large-scale generation at a site that makes sense, close to where a lot of the demand for electricity is. People think about offshore, it's 27 miles offshore, which is a long ways offshore, but a lot of the development in Virginia is along or near the coast, and we don't typically build power plants that close to where a lot of the demand is. So it's pretty close to where the demand is, and it'll be a chance to generate a large scale on behalf of our customers. So we're very excited about it, and we think it fits well with our all of the above strategy to make sure that we're keeping a reliable system and an affordable one for our customers. And one advantage of offshore wind is the fuel is free. We're not paying for that. And we think that's something that our customers should appreciate.
So I like that all of the above strategy. And certainly things have continued to change rapidly in the regulatory environment. The push towards clean energy has, from the regulators and some of the political environment, the focus on that's changed in different directions over the last couple of years. I couldn't help but notice when I'm walking up here today, there's electric leaf blowers from the folks that are outside. There's a clear commitment on clean energy. Would love to get your perspectives on how that fits into the culture and the strategy of the organization.
Yeah, so I think fundamentally what's important for us is having consistency in the rules of the road. Mm-hmm. The investments that we're making are decades long. Yeah. Anything that we do, a transmission line, a power plant, is something that's going to be there for a long time, and they typically take a while to develop, not surprisingly. You can't construct a transmission line overnight. You can't build a power plant overnight. And so knowing that the rules of the road that exist when you start are the same as the ones when you get into construction and you start spending a lot of capital and will be there throughout is really important. So a challenge for us in our industry, not just our company, but folks in our industry, is when we see shifts in the policy environment. The way we address that is through an all-of-the-above strategy. The interesting thing about sort of the way we do business is there are going to be policymakers who, when you're generating all of the above, there are going to be probably some things you're doing that policymakers don't like and some things that they do like. It makes sense to be diverse from a policy perspective as it does from a reliability perspective. So our view is we need to have this approach, this portfolio approach, this all of the above approach, and we need to be focused on getting cleaner. Our mission at our company is to provide the reliable, affordable, and increasingly clean energy that powers our customers every day. And all three of those pieces matter. Reliability matters, affordability matters, and increasingly clean matters. We take it very seriously. Nobody wants less clean energy. We just have to make sure we do it in a way that's reliable and affordable. So we spend a lot of time evaluating that. Once we have a case, then we take it to our regulators. We have to prove it out to them through a regulatory process where other parties can come in and challenge our assumptions. And we think that leads to a pretty good outcome. But ultimately, the best way to serve our customers and the way that we can get cleaner is through this all of the above approach. And I would point out that if you look at our company, we've reduced our carbon emissions at Dominion Energy since 2005 by about 50%, which while the economy has been growing and the power sector generally and our company specifically have done quite a bit in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. We're very proud of that fact. We've got more work to do, but that's because we've been taking advantage of the resources available to us in a way that's cost effective and reliable for customers.
Yeah, I love the way that you describe that on how that ties into the all the above strategy, particularly as all of our large businesses are trying to build long-term sustainable strategies in a really volatile environment.
Absolutely. We're not the only ones.
Yeah.
and we hear that from our customers, and it's really helpful for us to understand what their business needs are so that we can serve them best.
So on the terms of volatility, a similar challenge that we deal with at KPMG is the modern workforce. In preparation for this discussion, I was talking to a few partners, one that had highlighted that his father had worked here for 45 years, and as a child, he knew everything about Dominion. It's clear that there's a really deep, strong culture, and at the same time, the workforce is different. There is a lot of focus on cheaper labor. The labor dynamics are shifting. A lot of companies are sending work offshore. How do you balance the modern workforce with understanding that you also are going to have a lot of very physical demands of things that can't be AI-ified or shipped offshore?
Well, we start from the perspective that we're very embedded in the communities where we do business, just like KPMG is. But in our case, we serve everyone. We're a public service corporation. We don't, if a customer comes to us, we don't decide, well, we're not sure you're the right fit. Similarly, if you live in Dominion service territory, we're going to be your electric provider. But that means a great deal about how we think about communities and how involved we are in communities. And we want to make sure that we're doing well by our communities. That means hiring folks from the local community. And we, as a result, you do end up with generations of people who have worked at the company. It's not uncommon for us to have, for me to run into someone who works here, whose grandfather worked here or whose mother worked here. I feel really good about that. So as we think about the sort of workforce going forward, all of our jobs at every company, I'm quite confident, but certainly at ours, are becoming more technical. There's still a lot of physical labor involved in many jobs at Dominion Energy, but it also requires a technical understanding. So we focus quite a bit on training folks up at our company. We take advantage of programs at technical schools, at colleges, at community colleges, to make sure that we've got the right workforce that we need here. If you sort of think about the kind of job you can do in today's society, where you can earn a living that advances your kids, that gives them a better life maybe than you had growing up, the opportunities at a company like this, I think, are really astounding. And then once you get here, we're relatively large, we're not enormous, but there are 15,000 employees at Dominion Energy. You've got a lot of opportunities to move around and try new things. And I think that's an attractive part of our value proposition to someone who's thinking about coming to work here.
A few things that jumped out in that response that I think align really closely with the Greater Washington Partnership also is very regionalized, everybody's a customer. You're an active member in the community, not just because everybody's a customer, but because you're employing regionally also. I think what I heard there was that you're also very involved in the entire education environment in the region, trying to make sure that we've got folks with the right technical background that may not be from a master's education degree, but from a more technical environment.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm very proud of at our company is our work with Southside Community College in Virginia on a line worker training program. So we've helped sponsor that. They train folks up that we can then hire. I think that's a great model. It helps us fill employment needs. It helps the community. It helps folks who are looking for new skills and a new job. It's worked out really well. So those kinds of investments and programs have been good for our company. I think it's been really valuable to be part of the Greater Washington Partnership and sort of see how the partnership thinks about regional talent. We're all going to need additional talent. We're all going to need additional technical talent going forward. Being part of a larger organization like that can be really valuable.
How does AI and evolving technology factor into continued workforce education? Is that a big priority for Dominion right now?
I think it's a priority for everybody, and certainly a priority for us. There are real specific use cases today, and then some thoughts about what could be helpful in the future. So for example, I mentioned we're a heavily regulated company. That means we're in rate proceedings a great deal. And part of rate proceedings is a discovery process. The other parties, they send interrogatories or questions our way that we have to answer. We usually have to answer them on a tight time clock. We have to scour a ton of data to answer them. We're developing an AI tool that will help the first response. So the interrogatory comes in and an AI agent will draft the first answer without a human being having to be involved in scouring around, scurrying around, looking for answers. And then a human will then, an expert will take a look, massage the answer, make sure it's correct. But that kind of work is really helpful from an efficiency point of view for us. Those kinds of use cases I think we're going to see come up in different places. That's one example. I suspect when you think about the amount of data that we have at this company, the amount of modeling we do of the grid, there are going to be AI advantages to use there. In our customer service side of the business, I think there are real clear use cases to help our agents be more efficient. So we're sort of looking across the spectrum. We're not going to be at Dominion Energy, where I mentioned our focus on reliability is so critical. We're probably not going to be on the leading edge of AI adoption because we can't afford to break something. But we'll be able to take advantage of what we learn from others and be fast followers, I'd say.
Yeah, I think certainly I've noticed as a customer in those worst case scenarios where, you know, big power outage or something like that, the reliability angle and your use of technology on websites, phones, I mean, that has changed the customer experience over the last couple of years where it used to be sitting on hold for a long time. So I'm very thankful for your technology adoption.
Patrick, when I started working at Dominion Energy 20 years ago, you know how we knew your power was out? You called and told us. That seems kind of hard to believe, doesn't it? But that's the way it worked. Now, today, we have smart meters distributed where we know. And those kind of sensors help us operate the grid much better than ever before. And I remember this was before I came to work at Dominion, but in 2003, Hurricane Isabel caused much of Dominion's system to go out. We lost over half of our customers from that hurricane. And I remember I was one of those customers.
I was too.
And I'm sure you were. And the way I found out, tried to get an update on when I might get power back was to call the 1-800 number.
Yep.
And today I can check it on a website and I can report on an app and I can look at a map that shows where there are other outages in my area. And you're going to continue to see advancements from us on that to communicate better with customers so that they understand what's going on. Our reliability is even more critical today than it was just a decade ago. People are working from home more. I've got out of college age kids now, but anyone who has kids, you know, teenagers at home, if the Wi-Fi is out, that's a disaster.
Right.
Like, that's the worst possible thing that can happen. Well, the Wi-Fi is not working if we're not working. So we recognize the importance of keeping the lights on, but also communicating effectively with people when they're not on, and there are additional steps we'll be able to take thanks to technology that will help us.
Great. So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about, on a personal note, we're both lifelong Virginians, which is, it doesn't feel like there's that many of us anymore, certainly not in the Northern Virginia area. I've done a lot of research. It's hard to find a whole lot of personal data on you, but I think the one thing that jumped out at me immediately was you might be the only person that I've ever met that kayaks to work.
Yeah, it's a fairly small subset of people who live in the right place, work in the right place, and have the interest. But this city, Richmond, is such a fabulous place. And to me, what makes it unique is the James River running right through downtown, so right past our office. It's beautiful. There's white water there. It's the best urban white water in America, and I'm a white water aficionado, I guess I would describe that. I happen to live along the river about 5 miles upstream of the office. And when the weather's good and my calendar permits it, I'll canoe or kayak to work sometimes. Not a lot of people can do that, but a lot of people can take advantage of the river. And there's a lot of development going on in Richmond down by the river. CoStar is building a big new building down by the river. There's a new amphitheater that has been a great addition to the riverfront here in Richmond. And it's all helping contribute to a real vibrancy that some people who haven't been here or may not know as much about it, may not understand the great food scene here, the great art scene in Richmond. This is a great place to live.
Yeah.
Not everybody wants to or can kayak to work, fair enough. But it's a place where you can if you want to. And it's a great amenity for the city.
Well, we've certainly benefited from that. We're about four blocks from your corporate headquarters. And the number of people that we've seen move from a bigger city towards Richmond, and you know, I've been down here and been able to experience the running trails, the hiking trails, the mountain biking trails. It's very impressive what has happened to this city in the last 10 years. But I have to know, there must be a good fail story from kayaking to work. I'm assuming you dumped it one day or had...
I paddled a stand-up paddleboard in one morning, and it's probably good that there was nobody around to witness it. It's possible that there were a few swims involved.
I love it.
But, you know, they were far enough upstream so that nobody could see.
Yeah, well, I'm also a novice stand-up paddleboarder, so I understand how challenging that is. So let us know the next time, and we'll catch some blooper reel.
You should absolutely come out with me sometime. A few years ago, Outside Magazine actually named Richmond as the best river town in America.
I saw that, yeah.
And I think that's emblematic of what we've got here.
Well, very cool. So we'll close maybe with one question, just really looking towards the future. If you were to place one big bet on the future of this region, what do you think it would be?
Well, you know, I work in the utility business. We tend to be fairly even keeled, and we don't make a lot of big
bold
bets or predictions. But what I know from what I've witnessed of our customers is that this region is going to continue to be a technology hub. I just don't think there's any doubt about that. And that's going to attract a whole ecosystem of businesses, higher ed institutions, that's really going to make the whole corridor from Baltimore to Richmond thrive. We're seeing that among our customers. And so if I'm thinking about one of the great technological centers in the country, I think it's going to be right here.
Well, that's great. And you certainly are at the middle of it. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share a great story about one of the great companies in this region, one of the great leaders in this region, and looking forward to continuing this conversation going forward.
Thanks a lot, Patrick.
Thanks for tuning in to Strategic Compass. We hope you'll join us next time as we continue our conversations with the Greater Washington Area CEOs shaping the future from Baltimore through Washington, D.C. to Richmond and nationally.
Subscribe to Strategic Compass today and follow us for more insights from the corridor's most influential leaders, helping you stay informed and inspired.